Blog Talk Radio.
PM Eastern Standard Time. You're listening to The Ooze. I'm TC Downey, and with me on the air is Jeanette. Jeanette, how are you doing this evening?
I'm good.
You're good? Just real quick so I can throw it out there. Lehigh apparently had, I don't know, other obligations or whatever. He wasn't going to be able to make the show. He messaged me, like, I don't know, 15 minutes before the show. Show started to say he couldn't make it, so it's just you and I rambling this evening. So, the big crowd Lehigh usually draws, we're going to have to just hope that they still come out and listen. little bit of sarcasm in my voice. I mean, I'm sure Lehigh does have a big following, but I'm also equally as certain that we wouldn't be able to determine whether it was a he or she that was part of that following or not anyway. So just saying, Lehigh, whenever I talk to him, he always makes me flash back to the old Saturday night skit, the ambiguously gay duo. I don't know what it is about Lehigh that does that for me, but There's just that hint there of ambiguousness that always makes me think of that little cartoon.
Yeah, and I think he owns that as well. I've seen several forum posts where he's basically said, yeah, so, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if anybody's wearing that and rocking it out, it's Lehigh. So, With all that in mind, no, he's not out trying to hide his Easter eggs or get a head start on the Easter Bunny or anything. He legitimately has a reason for not being here, and though I don't know what it is, I'm certain of one thing. Lehigh is not that damn ambiguous, so. But, anyhow, well, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a weird night. Last week, we didn't get a chance to do the show because Lehigh, he had some prior obligation, and I kind of got stuck doing what I was doing, and so that only left you. And since I'm not sure I even gave you the keys to get back here, I don't know if the show is going to happen.
No, I don't have them. I don't have them, or I might have bring it, but no, I don't have them at all.
Right, which is kind of retarded on my part. I'm going to have to rectify that. But, it was kind of weird. You know, I looked up at the clock and went, fuck. And then I tried to send you both a message on Sin, but my computer was acting a fool. And, I couldn't get the browser to stay open long enough for me to do anything with. I did manage to shoot Lehigh a message on Facebook through my phone, which, I mean, for whatever reason, Sin just will not let me log in through my phone. So I did get him a message there, but that message was greeted with, I'm kind of in the same situation. So, yeah,
now,
we missed last week.
Yeah. My phone's weird with Zoom, too. I can't send messages. I can't format posts. Even if I put the HTML code in, it won't take it. Yeah. It's weird. Like, yeah, my phone, I can get on there, and I can look at stuff, and I can comment. It's just, like, it's really, really, really funky the way it works.
Right on. Well, I mean, yeah, it is, absolutely. And, I mean, as if Sin wasn't funky enough, trying to go through the whole thing on your telephone is similar to trying to pull your own teeth using, like, a fuse puller, one of them plastic
yep.
fuse pullers that they include in the new fuse packets. It's just painful.
Oh, yeah.
So, with all of that in mind, I thought, I guess I should first give a little bit of that backstory. About 5 weeks ago, we had a small litter of kittens born here at the house. And the first two came out within like a half hour of each other. And then all of a sudden, 2 hours later, one more came out. So we were kind of convinced that we were only going to have two kittens, and then this third one pops out, and we were like, oh, well, you know, maybe we'll give it up, or, I mean, we're not sure if we're ready for two kittens, or three kittens, two's enough, and then we got the mama, and then on top of that, you know, just two kittens, that's a lot of kitty to watch. I mean, because young kittens, they get into shit. They do things they shouldn't. And as humans, we have things around the house that we don't necessarily think about and consider might be harmful to these kittens or whatever. But, you know, we went through the process of raising these cats. And up until today, we had three really healthy kittens that were, doing their thing, growing up, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, just like maybe an hour, hour and a half ago, with the last one, the one that was born like a couple hours after the other two, just started walking really funny. And so we thought at first maybe he had to take a shit. Maybe had to pee. I mean, they're right in the middle of their transition from mom's tit to, doing things on their own. And so we, we did the normal thing of taking a wet washcloth and trying to encourage them to have bowel movement and trying to move them along. And he did have some bowel movements, but then all of a sudden he just went into what seemed like seizure. And it wasn't it. After about 10 or 15 minutes of trying to keep the cat alive, it just passed. It was just done. And, it was really kind of weird. Just all of a sudden, life was just gone. It was just stripped from this kitten's body. And it got me to thinking, because I don't have any kind of plan running into this show or whatever. It got me kind of thinking about, what this weekend is really celebrating. That most people would kind of point back to the resurrection of Jesus. And although that's kind of, that's become the more latter day reason why this holiday is celebrated, the spring holiday itself has been there forever as the holiday of fertility. I mean, this period in time right here. Is traditionally the time in which new things are brought into this world. And I thought that maybe we would touch on that a bit today. Not only will we talk about new life and new beginnings, but we might actually touch a bit on letting go, because inevitably nature's cruel. And sometimes you don't see things that are going to happen before they do.
Yeah, I don't know. I always really like this time of year, but honestly, when it comes to Easter, my parents barely did anything on it. And like for me, like I halfway forget it's even happening until it's over with. I always know when the start of spring is happening. Like, I know, always know that day. But, like, Easter always just kind of eludes me for some reason.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't honestly, I never have and never will really associated with this holiday particularly. I'm sorry, there's probably, I don't know, one third of a bottle of Whalers in me, so I'm stuttering a little bit, but Easter's never really in my mind held a heavy association to the resurrection holiday. I know traditionally that's what it's all about, but for me it was more about bunnies and colored eggs and bright flowers and chicks and little kittens and the I don't know, the coming of new life, the beginning of the warm season.
Well, and the thing is, though, with this symbolism that's attached to Easter, I don't know, very, very little of it really has to do with the resurrection anymore, especially. I mean, like, you know, Easter decorations, all this stuff. I mean, it's all actually oriented around it being, you know, a spring holiday or to celebrate spring. It's actually kind of, I don't know. I was actually talking to my husband about that one day, and I was like, I don't know. I said, it just seems to me like, you know, it's all the pastels and it's all the happy colors and stuff, but, like, what it's supposed to celebrate, you know, especially under that paradigm, is actually a fairly, you know, awful, bloody thing, you know, that occurred, and then he rose from the dead. I'm like, but it's not, you know, kind of pretty and happy, and, you know, like, it's almost like Easter's kind of cartoony anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it has always been cartoony, and I mean, for me, it the symbolism itself is very potent in its what do I want to call it? It's promiscuous nature. I mean, you got these colorful Easter eggs; they're all inviting. You got the warm little fuzzy bunnies and these little peeps and all this stuff that's kind of baby oriented. It's no wonder that this is when the pagans celebrated fertility. If you look around, if you live in an area other than Florida where there's really only one season, if you live in an area that's actually affected by seasons, right now you're looking around and you're seeing new flowers blooming, new green leaves turning up on trees, everything's young and fresh. So the cartoony thing kind of fits right in there because, I mean, who the hell associates cartoons with old people? I mean, for me, old people kind of, you know, make me think of Ben Gay and Walkers.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, no, I'm like, you know, where I live, it's exactly like what you described. I mean, like, spring comes on, I mean, it explodes, you know, there's birds everywhere, you know, you can hear the birds, and, you know, everything's green, you know, and it just, yeah, it's, and here it's always kind of like, it almost always feels like one day it was like everything was kind of dead, and then, like, the next day everything just kind of woke up. I mean, there almost doesn't seem to be much of a transition period where I'm at.
No, I honestly, I'm from just outside of Toledo originally, and I remember as a kid, observing that every shift in seasons was like almost instant. There uh-huh. wasn't a real transition from one stage to the next. It was just, okay, today, you know, it's spring. The ice is just starting to melt. There's new plants. Now it's hot. It's warm. It's uh-huh. the days are really long. Everything's bright and shiny to the trees are starting to turn colors, and the daylight's getting shorter, it's cooler. So, goddamn, I'm freezing my fucking nuts off. I can't wait till it's warm again. And, I mean,
yeah.
It was literally like that for me every year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, that's the thing that, like, this year, spring came early here, about a month early, actually. It started kind of at the very, very first part of March. But we had a very, very, we didn't really have a winter at all. I mean, like, we basically had a very long fall is what wound up happening. We got like snow once. It never really dropped below freezing. So, you know, at this point, especially here, I mean, spring is full on. It's, you know, it's going. It's been going for a while. And it's actually been really nice here, too, weather-wise. The weather during the spring, especially at this time, I'm always very, I don't know, it does in a sense, and this is going to sound kind of cheesy, but I do start feeling a little bit more alive when, like, spring really starts coming on.
Yeah, and that is as it should be. I mean, you would have to be very, very disconnected from nature to not at this point begin to feel some revitalization. I mean, I guess I could even comment that the more New Agey type occult stuff that's out there even points to this. You know, right about now, astrology's got certain planets moving in line that their particular attributes are rejuvenation and vibrant health. And the whole cycle is so recognized, it's so deeply ingrained in the human psychology. And I mean, that's probably mostly because we really are simply animals. And all animals are in tune with the seasons. Right now, everything is perking up. Everything is waking up. So I don't think you're anywhat disconnected. If anything, it sounds like you're, you know, just as much a part of the entire existence as anything else.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, there's, and I do think that there is, you know, I think that a lot of people kind of don't recognize the connection. Like you said, we're just animals, so we have that connection. We're aware when the seasons are changing. But for a lot of people, it always seems like they don't really stop to really notice exactly what's going on. It just sort of happens for them.
Yeah. But, I mean, no matter what, we still end up falling under the influence, such as pressure changes and stuff like that. I mean, for me, even if I'm not, like, paying attention to what the seasons are, which is rare because I usually, here in Florida, you're either burnt or wet. It's one or the other. There's no in between. You're either getting doused with thunderstorm after thunderstorm, which doesn't happen as frequently as the latter, or you're getting cooked, man. Literally, everything's scorched. So, but still, I feel the aches and pains of arthritis right before a storm happens, even when I'm not, you know, completely aware of what's going on with the weather.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the other thing that I find interesting about this holiday, this time of year, just in general, is that it is incredibly celebrated, but at least for me, I've noticed a sort of, in comparison to Christmas, for instance, it's like Easter is almost like a, you know, second fiddle in a lot of ways for a lot of people, which I also find kind of funny considering, you know, I don't know, out of the two things, it seems like the resurrection was definitely, you know, the big thing he did. You know, you think that would be the more important one.
Right. Listen, real quick, we got what looks like Jason Sorrell on the air, so I'm going to go ahead and bring him on. What's up, Jason?
Hey, yeah, not much. Just listening to the ooze and enjoying the show topic. When I went into the room to actually call in, I didn't hear you move on to the whole the resurrection thing. So I wanted to get back to the point of the changing of the seasons, and this being the, you know, of course, the springtime new season. And a lot of people would argue that we're not an aggregate culture anymore. So our rhythms, our movement as a society is no longer geared by the coming and going of plants, the harvest, and things of that nature. And I wanted to point out, as you know, as something you were saying, but on a practical level, you know, the psychology is still there, that summertime is, even in business, in modern business, this is usually the peak time for most businesses. There's more commerce going on. There's more engagement going on with you know, buying and selling and different things going on. So if you have a job, this this is the time when there's overtime to be worked. This is the time when there's all these opportunities for you to actually earn and make things happen. Also with longer days, warmer nights, there's more opportunity to be out and about. There's more opportunity to get out and do things. And we're just more active because, I mean, not necessarily anything to do with psychology, but because the environment allows us to do so. And then as you move into winter, you know, we shut down. We start to, you know, unless you have a business that's marketed towards the holiday season, which that's a whole other animal in and of itself, but, you know, you start to draw in. You start being concerned about, you know, getting through. A lot of people take vacations or have vacations because there's slowdowns in their businesses and everything. So you still have that mentality. And as I see it, you still have that. If you look at the seasonal marks, the eight, you know, the pagan holidays, the eight big ones, the wheel or whatever, the quarters and cross quarters or whatever they call them, that you could still use those agricultural holidays to mark time over the course of the year and still use those guides as what am I supposed to be doing in this period of the year right now. So here we are in the spring where we're supposed to be getting ready for new growth. We're supposed to be getting ready for an acceleration in our activity. And planning for that acceleration, planning for more opportunities, planning to take advantage of longer days and things of that nature. And I was wondering how you guys felt about that. Like, is this something, I know you're kind of, you know, you're kind of around it, but I see it as a practical thing that you could actually apply. So this cyclical process, this wheel of time, is that something you guys apply or is that something that you see as applicable in a practical manner?
Well, I will. I'll step up first and say that I absolutely, in a very conscious level, recognize that we're going into the longer days and that there's going to be more time to accomplish things. I generally tend to become more productive along this period of time during the winter and during the fall. I usually find myself more introverted, more introspective. As we shift towards this season, I become more extroverted, more focused on the things that I'm doing outside of me. That's possibly because I was raised in a small farm community and hadn't moved that far from seasonal thinking during my childhood before I actually hit down here in Florida. But, I mean, I do honestly myself see myself and recognize that I gear up and take advantage of these times.
Well, now, for me, it's very, very, very much that we live by that wheel. My husband works outside. So, you know, I know exactly when everything starts. And we pay a lot of attention to the weather and the seasons because of that. Because, like, during the winter, things are very dry for us, you know, and they start picking up financially and everything else as soon as spring starts.
Right. I mean, one thing I would like to point out is I was so psychologically connected to it that for the prior 12 years of my life, I actually picked an industry that it began its peak during the beginning of spring. It actually became alive at this time. And it wasn't until the break of summer and the fall itself that the business began to slow down. And then there was just a small peak again before the dead of winter. So, I mean, it's peculiar, but something that I've recognized over the years, absolutely.
Right on. In my life, like my father worked in a factory, and so we didn't, you know, it was, you know, every day was the same because he's doing the same thing. They had slowdowns during the holidays and what have you, but it was generally the same. You know, rolling into the military, it's a 24/7 deal. So, you know, you had holidays also, but it was still always the same. So for me, there was a real choice in taking a look at these different, you know, these marking time in this manner, in this kind of these eight quarter, you know, the four quarter and four cross quarters, you know, the spring equinox, what have you, and using those markers not just as, okay, this is what's going on now, but actually as, you know, stepping stones to plan things out, to be able to go, okay, in the spring, this would be a good time to do X, Y, and Z. So for me, there's a real practical application to it. But it really took me, you know, actively pursuing that application, because then in the wintertime, like especially in my industry, there's a slowdown, and I have to know that slowdown coming and prepare for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to throw that in there and see what you guys thought. So cool. I'll let you get back to doing your thing.
Right on. Well, we actually got another caller calling in right now, so we'll let you off the line, Jason, and go ahead and pick up this 585. Have a good night, man. All right, 585, you're on news.
Hey, guys, what's happening? My name is Chad. How are you?
Hi, Chad.
All right, what's going on, man?
Well, I'm a Christian, and I noticed you guys are you, do you practice Satanism?
I don't know if you would necessarily call it practice, sir, but something like that.
Sure. I'm not a Satanist. I don't know what you guys do. I see magic, Lovecraft, cultism. I don't see anything in here where it says where you are personally, but I'm just taking a wild stab based on the pictures that you practice some sort of opposite of Christianity.
Okay. Anyway, what do you got going on, man?
Well, I'm calling in with a challenge because I'm just curious. I'm gonna, you know, a lot of you guys are gonna laugh out there, but I'm just wondering. A lot of your callers are probably not Christians, or maybe they don't believe in God.
That's probably fair to assess. Yeah.
Hey. Okay. Just an observation. Well, I wanted to challenge you. I'm the challenge guy. People around Blog Talk Radio would know me as. And I'm an apologetic evangelist, and what I do is I like to challenge people's thoughts very peacefully.
I love apologetic evangelists. You guys have the most creative
insight.
So, all right, so let's get to the core of this. What are you putting forward, man?
I got the 1,000,000% proof that God exists.
All right, 1,000,000% proof. Go for it.
All right.
Awesome. Well, now I got to ask you guys a question. I don't see where, and I apologize. Usually what I do is I like to text you first to make sure it's okay that I talk to you and let you know who I am. But let me introduce myself, okay? We'll start with that. My name is Chad. I'm a Bible-thumping believer. I am a churchgoer, whatever you want to label me. I'm a Jesus freak. And there's nothing to get around that. I'm just a flat-out born-again Christian. I go around and I talk to people about Jesus, evangelize to them, and one thing that I like to challenge people on is whether or not they believe in even in the existence of God. And one example that I heard out there, I heard an evangelist talk to one. Are you guys going to give me a few minutes, or am I going too long here?
You're fine, man. Go ahead.
Well, cool. I was listening to an evangelist, and he was talking to this atheist, and the question that came up was, if my God were to judge you, would he find you innocent or guilty based on his Ten Commandments that you broke? And the atheist gladly said, well, according to your religion and according to your God, I would be guilty. But I don't believe in your God. He said, fair enough. But would he send you to heaven or hell based on those standards? The woman said, I would go to hell. But again, I don't believe in your God. Then the evangelist began to say, well, doesn't it concern you that he would send you to hell? I just slapped my hand on my face and said, no, she doesn't believe in our God, man. Okay?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to just bear with me. I was thinking to myself, well, wait a minute. There are a lot of people out there who don't believe in God because, like Jesus kept insisting through the Gospels, you won't believe until you see a sign, or you won't believe until you see proof. Well, I believe I have all the proof necessary, and it's found in the pages of Scripture. And that's what I talked to you guys about. Before I even get to the Gospel, I wanted to share with you what I learned that is just mind-blowing, maybe something you haven't thought of before. Is that fair enough? Would you guys be open to that?
I'm listening, man, but you're kind of starting to get me a little tired here, so let's get to the meat and potatoes.
You got it. Well, the first question you got to ask yourself is, why historically? This is history, man. I'm not talking about anything spiritual yet, okay? But in history, why did the disciples die? Why were they crucified upside down, burnt, boiled, hung? Everything you can imagine that happened to the disciples, why did they go through that based on their belief, okay? It's not because they wanted to die. It's because of the message. So I thought to myself, now hold on a second, what did they say that got everybody so hung up? Well, real quick, in 2 chapter 1, Peter says something very, very interesting, okay? He's going on in verses 14 through 16, describing the vision that he saw of Jesus transfiguring on a mountain, okay? He even heard a voice coming from heaven saying, "This is my beloved son, with whom you're well pleased." You guys might know that. But down here in verse 19 gets very interesting, because what he says is, "And so we have the prophetic word confirmed, which you do well to heed as light that shines in a dark place." In the King James Version, it says, "We have a more assured word." So I'm thinking to myself, on in history, what is Peter thinking? I mean, he saw Jesus' miracles. He saw everything about Jesus. But he's saying there's a more assured word. And I believe it's prophecy. I believe it's the Old Testament. Can I play a quick game with you guys real quick?
Well, I mean, first, let's make sure that we have the question clear here.
Sure.
Why did the apostles die?
Why did they?
That's the question.
Why was their faith so strong, and why were people angry at them? You got to ask a lot of questions. Why? What was so convicting about what the disciples were saying to the Jews?
That's a good question. And now, I'm pulling Jason Terrell up right now, and
okay,
we'll see what he has to say about that. So, Jason, what's going on, man?
Well, in answering the question as to why did these believers allow themselves to be martyred, or why were they willing to sacrifice themselves for their beliefs, I mean, that answers the question right there. They had beliefs and convictions they were willing to die for. That is nothing new to Christianity, or it's not novel, or it's not unique to Christianity. There were members of Egyptian dynasties who died for previous religious beliefs. It wasn't the Jews that killed the disciples necessarily. It was the early Romans before the conversion to Christianity. So to sit there and say that there are groups of people who have died for non-religious convictions. So to sit there and say that there's something unique or some evidence historically.
Are you talking about Muslims? Are you talking about Muslims
I'm talking about all of history. You said you wanted to put this in the scope of history. In every culture, in every era, there have been people who have died for their beliefs, religious and non-religious.
You're absolutely 100% right. I agree with you.
So then that is a non-proof. It doesn't matter. It does not matter what the disciples died for. They died for their beliefs. It's not unique to Christianity.
Yeah. Sure. I understand.
Right. So that makes that question's answer doesn't matter. That's the answer to the question of why they died the way they did.
Yeah. I get what you guys are saying. I haven't even gotten to the proof yet, though. I'm not even done. There has been a lot of people in history who have died for what they believed, okay? But hold on.
Okay.
The way the disciples died was by other men, okay? It was because of their message. It was because of their message, and that's where I'm getting at right now, okay?
There were other parties in history who have died for their message. There are people who have died at the hands of the Christian church for their message.
Okay.
It is no more significant than those deaths.
Yeah, like Nathan Hale, I regret that I only have
totally
one
life
to give for my country. His message was that America was free, so he chose to die for that. Jason's right. It's not a unique thing.
Okay. And I never thought it was unique. There was a lot of people who have died for their faith. If you want to look at other religions, there's a lot of other religions who do the same thing. Okay?
Okay.
I'm getting to the second point, which is the message.
You are treating it like it's some sort of special signifier. So what's special
the
about the Christians martyring themselves?
It,
they didn't martyr themselves. They were martyred for what they believed.
What is special about – I'm sorry, you're right. Let's not argue semantics. What is special about the Christians being martyred?
I haven't gotten there yet. They were martyred for what they believed and what they claimed they had. They claim they have touched, they have walked, they have been with the Messiah, the Mashiach, the one who came from God, the God-man, Jesus in flesh. And that drove
everybody crazy. They claim to have experienced something supernatural and died for their beliefs. Again, not novel, not anything unique in history.
Right. Very good. Very good.
So,
I can continue on here?
Go ahead.
Okay, great. Well, what I want to do is, because I believe that the real supernatural of this is the second part of it, which is, what is anybody ever going to do with all of the prophecies in the Bible? You see, any time that Jesus or his disciples quoted it, you can go back throughout the whole New Testament. The New Testament is confirmed in the Old Testament. If you want to know who Jesus is in the Old Testament, you really got to read what's in the New Testament. See, that, and like you said, friends, you're absolutely 100% right. In fact, the disciples didn't have any New Testament scriptures.
So what you're saying, sir, is the proof of the Bible is the Bible.
No,
that's kind
of
like saying that
the proof
of Star Wars is Star Wars.
Star Wars.
That's what I was hearing. If you wanted to learn about Anakin Skywalker, you had to read about I don't know what the hell is that dude's name.
It's like Jar Jar. Yeah, the last three chapters of Star Wars, the first three movies that were made, were proven by the first three movies of Star Wars.
Okay, right.
That's right. There we go.
So that's
not the 100% proof, though.
Let me 100% proof, and the Bible's not 100% proof. There are prophecies on the walls of the pyramids in Egypt that are true.
Yeah.
That validate themselves based on being fulfilled by future generations.
You cannot sit there and say, sir, definitively,
that Jesus was the Messiah. The Jews themselves denied Jesus being the Messiah. He did not necessarily fulfill everyone's standards.
Yep, I agree with you.
Okay, but we're waiting for the 100% proof, man, because I'm sure what you have to say is going to rock the boat on all the rest of this. So,
you got it, man.
Let's get to that.
Sure. Okay. I'm going to do. Hold on. Let me finish just the second part, man, and you can talk my ear off. Okay? Hold on. I'll stay on and I'll listen to everything you guys have to say to me. Just give me 2 minutes, okay? I'm going to read.
You got 2 minutes, man.
All right, I got 2 minutes. Just 2 minutes.
Hey, guys! I need to interject. I actually need to go because one of my neighbors got stabbed. So
okay.
I'll see y'all next
I'll
week.
Right on.
Hey, see you next week, Jeanette.
Oh, I guess somebody got the organ. I don't know.
Okay, so 2 minutes. Let's go, man.
All right, here it goes. Ready? What I'm going to do is I'm going to read you a couple verses only. I'm not going to read you chapters or big parts of the Bible. I'm just going to read you two small little verses. All I want you to do is tell me who it's speaking about. Fair enough?
Fair enough.
Sure. Okay, here it comes. For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. The government will be upon his shoulder. His name will be called Wonderful, Counselor, Mighty God. Who is that speaking about?
That sounds like a description of me.
Okay, but most people say it sounds like Jesus. There's even
more. It sounds like Horus. Any culture not coming from a Christian background would recognize that as Horus.
I tell you what, you guys, there are very specific scriptures in the Old Testament. There's 2,500 of them throughout the whole entire Bible. Now, hold on.
Okay.
Everything you have to say, just give me a chance to speak. If you took only 8 of the prophecies out of 2,500, the chances of one man fulfilling only 8, okay, even one is astronomical because it's supernatural. So when
okay,
I tell
before
people,
you go
when
forward,
I tell,
sir, before you go forward, because no, what we should do, sir, is when you make a point, when you make a statement,
uh-huh.
instead of expecting us to accept that statement as it is and let you continue, there should be a rebuttal. Your rebuttal is that one man fulfilled these prophecies. One man fulfilled these prophecies. Prove it.
It has been proven. It's history. You
no,
can go
no,
into Isaiah
44:28 and biblical. It's in
history.
Your Bible. Prove it. Prove it. Prove it historically. Show us other documentation. Show us firsthand accounts outside the Bible. The Bible's a biased source. Show us something else.
Because of the Dead Sea Scrolls, the book of Isaiah was already confirmed to be authentic, word for word for what we have already in our King James and New King James Version.
Okay, but
so,
wait a minute. That's only authentic in the fact that it does actually date from the time frame that it claims to be written in. That's not authentic in that the events that happened
right.
within it are actual facts. It's literally a matter of being
right.
able to carbon date the text and not a matter of being able to validate the events happening during that time. There's nothing in Roman historical documentation that would suggest that any of those events took place. I mean, that's a very weak argument, sir, if you're coming at this, because that's
dude,
completely...
There's 2,500 prophecies. I haven't even started, bro.
Homer wrote a poem about Atlantis. He treated the existence of Atlantis as historical fact. Based on that, it's a document. It's an old document. It's accepted or was accepted as truth by ancient Greece. Many people confirmed that. Historians wrote other books based on Homer's discussion of Atlantis. Do you, sir, believe in Atlantis?
Let's just put it this way.
You're not answering my question, sir.
Do you, sir, believe in Atlantis?
Yes or no? Yes or no?
I have no idea what Atlantis is.
Do you not believe in Atlantis?
I don't know what it is, so how can I believe in it if I don't know what it is? What is it?
You don't know
what Atlantis
is? You're
serious. You've never heard of the city of Atlantis.
Isn't that the gold city?
Oh, my.
It's a city. Are you serious?
What is it, a philosophy? I have a lot about the Bible.
Sir, here's the thing, okay? Jason, I'm sorry, man. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do what needs to be done. Sir, as an apologist, a Christian apologist, you suck. I'm just telling you that. I've come across ones that are just much, much better than you are. There are a lot of fallacious statements being made. There's no substantiated claim. I mean, even the most basic Christian apologists understand that you cannot validate something with something. That validation means that it has to be falsifiable. And if you don't know what that means, I suggest you grab your Wikipedia page, type that in, and figure it out, because you need to work on your argument. If you intend to broadcast the message of God, if you are the messenger of God, then you should at least be able to complete what's considered to be a logical train of thought. Let's not even get into the absurdities of some of the claims that you've made. I mean, the point about Homer is missed, but Nostradamus wrote twice as many prophecies as that and has had twice as many of them actually fulfilled. And still, if you were to read Nostradamus today and look at those prophecies, you would go, this guy is crazy. It's asinine. So you need a better argument than that. That's just not 100% proof. It's not ever going to be. I know a Satanist wrote the postmodern Satanism book. And who's a better Christian apologist than you'll ever be? And he doesn't believe in this stuff at all.
Well, we haven't even begun to get into it. I keep trying to share with you guys. I'm going to talk about documents and authenticity.
You're absolutely right. I'm going to talk right over you, sir. I am going to talk right over you. You say that you're going to present a 1,000,000% proof, yet every point you've made leading to that proof, because we're dancing around it, you can't get directly to it. Every point you made leading to that proof, I have been able to refute every point you've made. If you can't get to something solid, if you can't get to something that I can't argue against, then you have a problem. Your argument is flawed.
Okay, can I ask you a question then? Can I ask you a quick question?
Go ahead.
Okay. What would you do with Isaiah 44:28, written in 700 B.C., that talks about King Cyrus, what he would do to Jerusalem 180 years before he took to the throne? What do you do with those kind of prophecies?
Sir, do you want me to answer your question?
Uh-huh.
I would treat that as any other coincidental prediction or statement made by a culture, by people talking about the future, that happened to fit the facts as related at some future event. It is not unique. It is not unique to the Bible. There are Aboriginal tribes in Australia who talk about in dream time somebody talking about something happening in the future and then seeing it go down. You've got people in the Central America drawing pictures of airplanes and they've come about. You could sit there and say that Gene Roddenberry, who wrote Star Trek, predicted the cell phone.
Wait a minute.
What does that validate? Nothing.
I have a prediction for tomorrow. I'm sorry, I have a prediction for tomorrow. I predict that there are going to be a bunch of people who go to church and celebrate Easter. That's my prediction. And I bet you that, without a doubt, I will be correct. Does that make me a prophet? Does that make me somebody who has some divine power to look into the future and predict events? The same kind of thing happens all the time with economists and people who examine anthropological subjects. You can sit there and go, you know, I read an article the other day, economists are saying that we will experience a global economic crash in 2030. And they have just as much potential of being correct as anybody who writes any statement about anything that happens in the future. So the fact that the two things actually coincide, the fact that that prophecy is actually fulfilled, by itself, it means absolutely nothing.
Since you asked me a question, I'd like to be able to ask you a question.
Sure.
The Bible, as you know it, the document that you, as you know it, was written or validated by the Council of Nicaea. There was a couple different councils involved.
Rewritten.
A group of people 500 years after the life of Jesus Christ, if he existed, they write this book, or they pull the book together. They call the book together. Can you prove, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that they did not go back into the Old Testament and alter the meaning or alter what was written there to fit the facts in the future?
Well, the earliest documents, because we have 5,600 manuscripts and the segments, okay, and we can date those back to between, I do believe, 70 and 100 A.D., so it doesn't go to 500 AD.
So what you're saying, sir, is all biblical scholars, all Judeo-Christian scholars, all Jewish scholars are in 100% lockstep agreement with the interpretation of those documents.
All scholars are in agreement? Is that what you're asking me?
I'm asking you. I'm looking for validation. I'm looking for your interpretation to be correct. If you can tell me that everybody agrees with the interpretation, everybody agrees that the King James Version is an accurate translation of the Jewish scrolls that you're referring to, then you'll have
your something. If everybody agreed, we wouldn't have so many denominations with so many beliefs. No, they don't all agree.
Okay. Well,
it only matters what's
point.
True
that's
and what's
fine,
validated in the scripture.
If everybody agreed, if anybody could prove with 100% veracity that any religious viewpoint was correct, we'd all stop arguing. We'd all start following that one religion.
No, because of the wickedness of man and because of the hardness of man.
You're not going to convince anybody here tonight because you cannot do what has not been done in this civilization since the beginning of time. You cannot convince everyone that your mythology is in fact truth.
Well, if you read it in its context, you would absolutely get the truth out of the Bible. But if you want to be a religion that interprets the way you want, which man has done over centuries and years, that's why we have many religions. That's why we have many denominations, because people want to take the scriptures and they want to twist them around.
Okay, you're right. So you say that if I read the Bible correctly, I would get the truth and I would be convinced. What's the correct way to read it? Which version? Which version is the correct version, sir?
King James. You can read the New King James. I like those too. New International.
Is it the King James or the New King James? Because there are differences. So which one is correct?
Just by wording, just by new, you know, the language that was developed over
it's
the years.
It's the word of God. I don't want it to be messed up. I don't want to get the wrong translation. It's the word of God. Which one is correct?
It's all correct. You just got to read it in context.
They're
and then
you
got to look up the Greek and Hebrew meanings. That's
King
why
James
we have
version,
concordances.
The King James Version, the New American Version, the Catholic Version, the Jehovah Witness Version, they're all
you
correct.
Think they had
the Mormon Version is correct.
Added
which
scriptures,
one is correct, sir?
Book
so
of Judah. There's
so
a lot of
Ignatian. You're saying it should be the New King James and the King James Version, they're both correct, even though
they're
all
out there, man. They're all out.
Even though they're differences.
I agree with you.
This is rich. This is rich. Listen, even among Christian scholars, even among canonical scholars, there are huge, huge disagreements
as to
what scripture should be allowed into what's considered to be the canonical text and what shouldn't. I mean, there's five different variations that I'm aware of, some of them having as much as, I think, 55 books more than the rest of them. So, I mean, reading it in context is somewhat trying to put together a puzzle when you're not even sure all the pieces come from this same box. I mean, it's just crazy. It's the equivalent of trying to say that because you have a 1,500-year-old piece of toilet paper, it must be what Sun Tzu wiped his butt with. I'm sorry, sir, but there's just nothing. There's absolutely nothing to give any kind of weight or gain to anything that you're saying. It's a mental jerk-off. And with all that being said, before anybody else speaks, Jeanette's coming back on the line, so let me go ahead and pull her on. What's up, Jeanette?
Hey, one of my neighbors just died. He got stabbed four times. He was trying to break up a domestic dispute between a woman and a man. Got him between them, told him to calm down. The guy stabbed him and then pushed him down a flight of stairs. Yeah.
The guy stabbed him
on the loose. Yeah, we can't get outside the apartment now because they've got the dogs trying to find the guy because he took off as soon as he stabbed him. Yeah. Well, it's not just that, but the guy was trying to be a hero.
All this guy was trying to do is be a good Samaritan to help his neighbor.
Yeah.
The good Christian thing to do. I wonder, and I don't want to make light of this person's death, but where was your God when this person was stabbed and died trying to help his neighbor? Where was your God? Why didn't he intervene?
That question is the mystery that most men like to solve.
That's the worst answer ever. There's a widow outside hysterical right now.
Terrible.
She's wondering where was your God? Where was Sonny Jesus when this guy was stabbed?
Well, first
she
of all, wasn't Jesus' fault that person died?
You
can't
Jesus
blame Jesus.
I didn't say it was Jesus' fault. Unless you can sit there and say that God and Jesus had the ability to intervene, and based on their apathetic failure to intervene, their complacency to intervene, then they are at fault. There are certain states in this country where they would be found at fault, where they would be held criminally liable for being able to take action and failing to do so.
Mm-hmm.
What's your God?
The question that you're not going to like. The where is my God is he's holy. He's everywhere. He is a God who is perfect, all-knowing.
And he's
an perfect.
Landlord.
And
no,
he's
an perfect. He decided not to intervene. That man, he decided that part of his plan was for that man
God,
to
sir.
Die.
You don't believe in God, right? You don't believe in my God?
Does it matter?
Sure it does, because it's your view of God.
Should it matter to you if I believe or don't believe?
It matters greatly to me, but I'm not asking that kind of question. I'm asking you if you believe in my God. The question is...
You haven't established who your God is yet. You pointed to two different books for me to read to find out about your God. I can't know. I don't know.
All right, man. Well, I tell you, hey, guys, it was a pleasure talking to you. I appreciate it. Yeah. best to you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call in, and I would definitely look into the term falsifiability. There he goes. He's off the air. awesome. I didn't even answer that question, man. That's sad, because I was going to tell him, absolutely, I totally believe in your fucking God. But because he's such a cruelest, heartless, mean fuck, I'm trading him my ticket.
Hey, and Jeanette,
yeah.
I don't know how close you were to this neighbor. I shouldn't have made light of this tragedy that happened there.
Actually, it's the reason I called back in, Jason. I called back in to ask the question you were asking. It was why I called back in. Yeah.
Everything is okay with your family. Everything is okay with your family, though. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Everybody's fine. Yeah. Everybody else is just kind of like one of those kind of shocking, like, I don't know, like, what the hell's going on with reality moments.
Yeah. No death should necessarily be used for some ulterior motive by any group. I mean, but hell, if they can do it with Trayvon Martin, well, then fuck, I can do it with that guy too, right? So.
Mm-hmm.
What's absolutely amazing to me is the second half of the show, what I had intended to be the second half of the show, was going to be about how death is coped with in the satanic community. Because you have an entirely different perspective or approach or view to what life really means, kind of
mm-hmm.
encompassed in this. And, you know, instead of our entire lives being wasted in some fruitless preparation for some afterlife we may never experience, you know, we value every breath we take.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to me, when that breath is finally gone, it's a whole different song that you're hearing play. And I was kind of curious as to what you guys' thoughts were on that.
I think, honestly, whenever, like, something really bad happens, honestly, it actually brings home to me sort of why the God myth, so to speak, continues to exist for so many people, because when something happens at random, it would be so much easier to be able to say, well, it was part of a plan that I don't know about, or, well, you know, they're in a better place now, or, like, in the South, it's barely even, you know, if anything bad happens, somebody will always say, I'll pray for you. And it doesn't even mean that they necessarily will. It's like a way to say, well, I hope it gets better, you know. And I was actually thinking about that today. Actually, I was thinking about that phrase, like, you know, like, that's my instinct to say, but it's like, it's so hollow, but it does sort of represent, you know, kind of like I care and want things to get better for you at the same time. It just always sort of brings home why people cling to those beliefs for me.
Right. I can understand that. Jason, do you have some thoughts on it?
A lot of what you had to say, when there's a death near you, it's a reminder to me that time's short,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, the clock is ticking, and that, you know, there's no guarantee one way or the other. And that's the big thing I think this guy's missing out on, right? So there's no guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
His Bible doesn't guarantee anything. His God doesn't promise anything, because there's no proof. Sure, his faith and everything else, you know, carry him through his life, and it's nice to have a structural paradigm. And the fucked up thing is, okay, if, you know, based on the teachings of his Savior, Jesus Christ, the core essence of his teachings, there are a lot of things there I agree with, but
mm-hmm.
not in the manner that his followers want me to agree, okay, not the way that this guy was pushing it. When it comes to death, it should serve as a reminder to live. And then when you die, while it's good and fine to hope for an afterlife, while it's good and fine to hope for some sort of promise of paradise or something better or even another plane of existence or whatever, what should be important is, did I live a good life and did I make an impression on the people while I was here? Because what's going to be carried forward of you, what's truly going to be immortal, is that the impression, the impact you have on the people around you. And the bigger your impact, the longer you'll carry forward. We have been, I mean, as animals, our genetic material is carried forward. The biological matter is carried forward in our offspring. But we are also intellectual beings. So we have the ability to transmit information almost as freely or more freely than we do our DNA. And I think that's the key, is having that impact on future generations. And if every person were to take that responsibility seriously, every person would sit there and say, you know, it is important that I get out there and make a message and make that message carry forward in time. You build this monument to yourself in time that outlasts you. Then we would see so much shit in this world change. The development of our species so rapidly, you know, evolved, so rapidly move forward, because everybody would have that focus, the betterment of the species as a whole, based on whatever direction you're going in. But with the purpose of being, you know, everybody working towards that goal of our survivability, our becoming better humans, whatever it is we're going to be doing. So death is just a reminder that the clock's ticking to me.
Yeah. Well, I would echo everything that both of you two have said. I would also kind of point to the fact that I would really like to believe, and I'm saying that exactly like that for a reason. I would like to believe that things leave this world to make room for other things to come into it, and that it really is all about the cycle forward and, you know, the inevitable change and growth of things. At the same point, I think that I'm just as clueless today as our first ancestors were as they watched one of their buddies get, you know, struck by lightning or drowned in a pool because they hadn't figured out they needed to swim yet or something like that. I mean, it's just as frightening and just as unexpected today as it was, you know, at the beginning of man's time. So I guess those are the only real things that I'd want to add to what you guys have been saying. I did kind of think that it was kind of a neat thing to look at, because for me, once you take the idea of God out of the equation, it gets very scary. You know, it gets really frightening when you think about, you know, how exposed, how random things really are, and how tomorrow or even the very next second could be that last second. I guess that's kind of what brought that up.
But I guess I got to have a different spin on that, because I fully believe that we exist due to some random accident in the universe, you know, a lucky occurrence, and here we are, boom, life, okay? But how that happened, how life occurred, has no bearing on what life's doing from this point forward. There is no plan in place other than life breeds more life. There's a tenacious desire to live. There's a tenacious desire to pass things forward, to move on. And that's what's unique about life compared to anything else in the universe. Stars don't do that shit. Planets don't do that shit. Nothing else but life does that, has this urge to continue on and on and on. And take God or deity out of it, you know, that urge right there, if you wanted to worship something, worship the urge to live. You know, make it part of the what they want you to do with Jesus. Put that in your heart. Put that in the forefront of your mind. I'm going to go out fucking today, and I'm going to live. I'm going to fucking take this thing by the fucking horns and make some shit happen. I'm going to make my mark so that when I pass, when I'm dead and in the ground, when worms are chewing on my ass, people will remember that was a motherfucker that did some shit, whatever it is.
Right on. I think that's good stuff right there, man. I mean, I can't disagree at all with it.
So remember that I chewed some apologetic evangelist's ass on the ooze on the day before Easter. I'm going to hell.
We'll see you there, man. Anyway, guys, we're actually over, so whatever you got going on, let's do it.
All right, are you ready to roll?
I extended the time. I'm just saying, we got plenty of time.
I wish the guy had hung out. I wish he did. I wish, because I was having fun with that shit. I wish he would have stuck around. I think he rolled off. I think he rolled out the way he did because he was this close to being convinced that he was wrong. He was this close to changing his mind. And he felt that in himself. He did. I can't do that. I got to get the hell out of here. They're about to convert me over to Satanism or whatever. You know, and I was thinking about this today, and Jamie and I talked about it, and now this thing that happened with this dude tonight, I think we need to see if Pastor Bob and Pastor Bill can make an appearance tomorrow on Easter evening.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that would not be such a bad idea. It's been about a year since their exorcism, right?
Yeah, it's been a year. We haven't checked in with Pastor Bob and Pastor Bill. We don't know what happened to them after the exorcism. It kind of was a weird show, kind of closed out weird. But I bet if we can find those guys, maybe leave the key to the Ooze studio in the door so they can get in and do their thing. I think that may be the way to go tomorrow night.
Right on, man. That's a good idea.
So... unless there's another need for me to call in, I'm going to go ahead and drop out, man.
Well, hold on, because we still have 213 hanging on, and I just wouldn't feel right letting you off the air without letting you pitch at them first. So I'm bringing 213
on. You know what? Yeah.
I don't want to bitch at 213. I just think it's just weird. It just bothers me. You know, you call in, you listen to the show. Obviously, you're a fan. Obviously, you like what we're doing. You like the sounds of our voices or whatever. And I see we had all kinds of theories go out there. It's Ivan. It's this person. I don't know who it is. I still say, you know, this is a person. She's at home stroking her pussy, cats. And, you know, she's sitting there listening to you. This is the only real connection she has with the outside world. We bring her all the information she needs to know. She feels, you know, she feels good. She feels she's part of our little special family. So, you know, more power to her and everything. And just keep tuning in. And awesome. I hope she enjoyed my rant.
Right on. 213, you're on the air right now. You can go ahead and respond. 213? No, you might be right. Maybe the double ender's stuck in her mouth.
You know what would be really fucked up? This is somebody who really digs our show. This is somebody who just thinks our show is awesome. They don't have a very good internet connection, so they actually call in to listen to the show because they dig the show so much, and they're mute. They just can't talk.
They can't say a word. Meanwhile, we're busting their chops. Yeah, no shit.
Right. Here we are. Here we are fucking with them. Yeah. But then, you know what? You could text. You could type in. Well, I don't know. You couldn't get to the chat room with your phone either. Yeah, you're just totally fucked. And you have to let us bust your balls.
Yeah.
That's the way it is.
You know, it's highly likely that 213 is Jesus, and that's why he doesn't say anything. He doesn't want to get his ass pwned.
Oh yeah. There's lots and lots of money in Christianity right now, and he hates his followers to find out that he listens to the Ooze because
exactly.
That would be bad.
That's blasphemy as its best, man, right there.
All right, man, I'm dropping out.
They're on here in their own right at this point.
Right on.
Yeah. Tomorrow night. Well, I'll catch Pastor Bob and Pastor Bill tomorrow night, man.
All right, sounds good.
Later.
All right, so anything you got left to say, Jeanette, before we go ahead and roll off this?
No, let's go ahead and roll out.
All right, well, my condolences on your neighbor. You know what? Actually, boom, there is one last thing that needs to be mentioned. A couple of co-hosts for the Ooze that have been absent for a while due to complications with the pregnancy, they lost their newborn baby today a couple hours after it was born. So I wanted to say that our thoughts here are with them. You know, we feel their loss, and wish them, I guess, a speedy recovery if that's possible. And that's really all I have to say to it. Sean and Lexi, we love you here, guys.
Yeah, I love you guys. I've been thinking about you all day.
Yeah, so that's it. That's all I had to say. Let's go ahead and roll this outro and get out of here.
All right.
All right. Have a good night, Jeanette.
I will. Bye.